Please join me in the responsive invocation which is in your order of service. We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength. It's a sacred time, this. Let's begin together in song.
Today's reading is an excerpt from Sin, Evil, and Economics by contemporary Christian theologian Sally McFaig. Thanks to technologies of communication, transportation, and commerce, the world of the 21st century is more deeply interconnected than ever before. And it is increasingly clear that the unifying logic or discourse is the language of capitalism. Not everyone chooses to recognize the primacy of that language, and some speak defiantly in other tongues, but there can be little argument that it has become the global discourse with which all others must contend. It is the defining myth of our time. While we each have choices to make about the degree to which we will buy into the myth, practically no one on earth has the freedom to opt out altogether. It is that pervasive and that powerful. And at the heart of capitalism, I have argued, is the exact dynamic of freedom and bondage, as described by the famous theologian Augustine's theory of evil. Capitalism assumes that we are creatures of desire, and it stokes our desire for lesser goods to the point of addiction, finally rendering us powerless to opt out of its dynamic. What would it mean, after all, to get outside of capitalism in today's world? Even those who want nothing to do with it, who view it as the pinnacle of Western corruption or imperialism, or whose minds and bodies bear the scars of its excesses and exclusions, are nevertheless pulled into its captivating influence. Strangely, while market capitalism began with a classic Christian view of humanity based on selfish greed, it has eventuated into a naive, optimistic, narrow, and undifferentiated view of sin and evil. Economic theory claims that the very core of who we are, individuals motivated by insatiable desire for more goods, is the basis from which to build the good life for all. From the selfish desires of billions of human beings turning the earth's resources into goods for sale, prosperity for all will come, presumably, eventually. This vision of the good life, however, neglects two huge facts: the just distribution of the earth's resources, as well as the limits of those resources. We now know that these matters are not mysteriously taken care of by the invisible hand of economics. On the contrary, the insatiable greed of billions of human beings causes horrendous injustices to other creatures, human and non-human, as well as undermining the sustainability of the planet itself. But market capitalism does not deal with the tragic dimensions of sin and evil. Its view of sin is narrow and viewed only as a sin against God, even though the implication of unregulated greed results in sin against neighbor and nature. By bracketing sin within the limits of the violation of God's will, it eliminates from view the massive evil that our individual choices have created for others on planet Earth.
This is a time to connect to that which is most important within you at this moment. You're invited to do this by lighting a candle by the window or sitting in quiet contemplation. I invite you to join me now in a time of prayer. The following are the words of Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become wholly ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of all being, common to us all and to all living things. Evoking the presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and towards all living beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to others. With humility, with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and on earth. Amen. With the Thanksgiving holiday just passed, there is now the seasonal tumble into the Christmas holiday. This past Friday apparently marks the beginning of the Christmas season, a beginning marked by shopping rather than any religious significance. Or perhaps shopping is a religion for many people. The media attempts to whip up excitement about the beginning of the Christmas shopping season as if it's some sort of race or competition. The mantra seems to be, they who buy the most presents wins. We are told about the must-have goods this season and the so-called bargains to be had. And those of us with children have already been barraged for a few weeks about the gifts our children want for Christmas. A list that seems ever-changing. Or perhaps I missed the point and my daughter's new requests were actually additions to the previous requests and not replacements for it. I might have a very disappointed daughter this Christmas when she only gets the last thing she asked for. Looking to blame someone for these endless requests for presents, I blame the media. Then I realised that my 5-year-old daughter can't read yet and she doesn't watch television, but she has a remarkably impressive network of communication that lets her know about all the best toys and the hippest presents to be had. I wish a church communication was this good. You know, this week I read an article where a group called Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood had asked the toy industry to cut back on the marketing to children due to the severe economic hardships being experienced by many families. The Toy Industry Association's response was a firm defence of current marketing practices by asserting that children are a vital part of the gift selection process. You heard that right. Children are a vital part of the gift selection process. It appears to me that the Toy Industry Association sees children as their most effective and certainly their most persistent salespeople. So begins the journey into adulthood, with children beginning their long roles as consumers early, with little regulation of advertising. Then we leave the individual parents battling the massive forces of the advertising industry in a David and Goliath battle. But we seem to have taken the slingshot away from David and given it to Goliath. While the creation of desire for some products by advertising and the resulting peer pressure is most noticeable in children, I think most of us are affected by it. It is said, insofar as Americans have a collective identity, it is as consumers who live amid unprecedented material choice and the worker who bends the earth to a virtually unrestrained human purpose. Even in difficult economic circumstances, as we're experiencing now, consumerism permeates our society in so many ways. It creates values and meaning for many people. James Luther Adams, the 20th century Unitarian theologian, maintained that all people have a religion, whether they realize it or not. He says, "The question is not, shall I be a person of faith, but rather, which faith should be mine? For whether a person for whether a person craves prestige, wealth, security, or amusement, whether the person lives for God, country, science, or plunder, that person is demonstrating a faith, showing confidence in something. Find out what he gives his deepest loyalty to, and you have found his religion. Those were the words of James Luther Adams. In listening to these words today, it appears to me that money, material possession, and our roles as consumer are defining meaning and value for many of us in our society today. Therefore, fulfills many of the roles traditionally associated with religion. Our economic system through consumerism and advertising is a powerful, perhaps dominant, cultural force in our lives today. Yet we are reminded in the reading we heard earlier from Melita, it is based on individual self-interest, which, unless we control it, is just the contemporary reincarnation of the sin of greed. While economics is often thought to be the study of money and financial systems, it is really a study of human decision-making for the allocation of limited resources. Economics is about how we deal with scarcity and limits, with money being an important mechanism to determine the allocation is efficient. Sometimes I find it hard to think of money as just a tool. In our lives, it seems often a goal in itself. We choose our jobs based on it, plan our retirements based on it, and it places very real limitations on the lives of most of us here. Some people say that money makes the world go around. Another view is that money doesn't really make the world go around, but it certainly makes the journey a lot more enjoyable. Regardless, money is important and necessary to meet many of our basic needs. But money can become an obsession for us as we desire more than is necessary and distorting that which is most important to us. All the major religions caution us to be aware of making money an idol or a false god. Yet religious institutions walk that difficult line of needing money for their own survival, but not wanting to be obsessed about it. In the reading earlier, the author Sally McVeigh states that in the 21st century, the unifying logic or discourse is the language of capitalism. And then she asks that interesting question of what would it mean to get outside capitalism in today's world? We are all so submerged in the world of commerce, both as consumers and workers, that it's difficult to remember that some institutions do not operate on the typical model of market capitalism. Our non-profit philanthropic institutions are an example, which collect donations, then distribute goods and services to those who need it. There is no attempt to make a profit, therefore they can provide the goods and services to everyone, free or at reduced cost. Another institution that operates on the edge of market capitalism is churches, like this one. Some might say that our church operates in the hardest aspect of both the non-profit and for-profit world. Our income to support the church is through donations from members like you. That sounded like a National Public Radio announcement there. So. Our income to support this church do come from members like you, while much of our spending is in the world of market capitalism. We cannot turn around to the electrical utility company and say that our donations are down this month, therefore we're not going to pay you. I'd love to see the faces at that suggestion, actually. The existence of all elements of this religious community is dependent on the donation of money and time from the members of you, from members of the congregation like you. You're asked to donate what you can financially to sustain and grow this community. There is no market mechanism that determines the price in competition with other churches. Can you imagine charging people to come for worship? $20 for the senior minister, $5 for the ministerial intern, and a refund if you don't like the message. Perhaps I'll talk to stewardship about that idea later. So. Not only is the idea crass, it misses an important point about why we are here. We have a message, our culture, and our values, which we wish to promote to all who are interested. We believe our religious vision has value, but we also believe it is too important, too valuable for people being prevented to hear our vision by lack of money. Most religious groups want to transcend the artificial limits placed on access to places and experiences because of a limitation of money. Those limits are placed by our economic system in an attempt to handle the scarcity of resources and in a desire to make a profit. Religion is attempting to remove these limits by seeing our message and values as a source of abundance, not a cause for scarcity. Most of us are attracted to our religious community because our lives are improved in some ways by being here. Many of us feel affirmed by being part of this community. Some of us have had life-changing experiences here, and I know people who feel that the liberal religious message has been life-saving. How do you put a dollar price on such a place? You can't. The work is too important, but such activities do come at a cost. Therefore, as a religious community, we let each of you to decide for yourselves about the value of the community and the contribution you wish to make to ease the cost of running it. We are outside the market systems since we give our service away without charge, and those of us who choose contribute our money and time as we determine is appropriate. Our economic system, on the other hand, is very efficient at delivering a variety of products and services to people at a very low price. That is its purpose, and we all live with the benefits of that. Our economic system was never developed to be the promoter of values in a society. That is what religion is supposed to be for. Values such as ecological sustainability and greater justice for more people are not promoted in our current economic system unless we as consumers force it to. Our consumer habits are perhaps the clearest way that we express our moral choices on a daily basis, yet there seems to be a strong separation between our economic lives and our religious life. The famous industrialist Andrew Carnegie said that Christianity should not interfere with how money is made and only get involved in how its surplus should be distributed as far as charity. It seems that many religious organizations have not moved beyond such thinking, therefore often fail to critique our economic system, where it may be exploitive of people or abusive to their environment. If injustice in our society is caused by unethical production of goods, unsustainable consumption of resources, or deceitful advertising, it is not only appropriate to address the issues, but I would say our religion calls us to do so. In the reading we heard earlier, the author Sally McPhee discusses the use of the Christians' doctrines of sin and evil in addressing the harm excessive and unregulated greed can cause to the world. Her critique of market capitalism is that sustainability and justice for all inhabitants are not central goals of the system. Now, we do not talk much about sin and evil from Unitarian Universalist churches, and perhaps that's why many of you are here. But I think the ideas behind the doctrines, if not the terms themselves, can be useful in addressing the excesses and exploitive elements of our economic system. Now, the liberal religious tradition has moved a long way from the doctrine of original sin, where humanity is inherently depraved. But the concept of sin itself is something we're a bit more ambiguous about. I feel comfortable with McVeigh's idea of sin being an excessive concern for ourselves at the expense of the needs of others and the planet. Sin is something we are responsible for and can control through the choices we make in our life. McVeigh defines evil as institutions, practices, and attitudes resulting from an exploitative economic system based on excessive individual self-interest, which creates suffering and deprivation in our world. For example, it may seem in my self-interest to buy a product at a low price, but if the product was made by forced child labour, then I think it is appropriate to call this a sinful act supporting an evil system. Strong, but I feel appropriate words. We can replace sin with wrong, and evil with bad. It is the meanings, not the words, that are important. With these concepts of sin and evil, or wrong and bad, then this creates up a great tension between our economic system and religion. Market capitalism believes that the good life is built by each of us pursuing our own enlightened self-interest. Religion cautions against excessive self-interest and reminds us that through our interdependence, we are called to care for one another and the planet. I think this is a question we deal with daily, satisfying our own needs. When does our enlightened self-interest become excessive self-interest? How do we, as religious people and consumers who desire a good life, deal with the tension of this self-interest as we go about our busy lives and deal with that child who wants just one more Christmas present? You really want an easy answer to this one, don't you? Alas, there isn't one. We have to accept that tension between enlightened and excessive self-interest as real and difficult. Our choices as consumers can have a negative impact. Therefore, we should be intentional and thoughtful about our purchasing choices. The stewardship of our planet and the welfare of all people is particularly important in the age of the global economy, since the environmental impact and the exploitation of people may occur far from where we purchase the products. Therefore, the suffering could remain invisible to us unless we are vigilant. The notion of interdependence between ourselves as consumers and workers who produce the goods, wherever in the world they are, leads us to take responsibility for buying products that were produced without exploitation. Examples of exploitations would be child labour, coerced labour, or paying non-livable wages. If our individual consumer decisions create an economic system that prevents people receiving basic needs and those producing goods a reasonable wage, then our individual decisions should be able to change the system. I, like many of you, have tried with my own consumption habits to move beyond the obvious criteria for buying of price, function, and style to consider some following factors. I really try to distinguish between my true long-term needs and my short-term, often misplaced desires. I also think, how can I borrow, barter, or get used what I need? Does everyone in my block need a lawnmower, or can we share it? Consider factors other than price when buying products, as how goods were produced, including working conditions, reputation of companies, and the environmental impact. These criteria do not make shopping easier, since they take effort, and any desire for perfection will be frustrating. The goal for me is greater intention and awareness in my consumer habits. This allows me to bring my religious values into my everyday life in a meaningful way. We are both the beneficiaries of the market capital system and often sufferers by the hardships it creates. Our economic system is good at delivering products for a low price and handling scarcity. It was not designed to, and therefore does not do a good job of determining our values of what is valuable to us. In our consumer culture today, it is too easy to confuse price with value. They are not the same thing. Just consider what is most valuable in your own life. I suspect that it has nothing to do with the price you paid for them, assuming they even had a price. The love of friends and family, the old photographs we have, a book of special importance to us, that great piece of music that always brings us to tears, or that life-changing experience that might have happened within these walls. Those items are dealing with a currency that is far more important than money. They are dealing in the eternal values of finding what makes our life worth living and meaningful. Let the economic system determine price. We are the only ones that can define us for ourselves, value, and what has worth in our own lives.
Please join me in the
response of benediction, which is in your order of service. We leave this sacred time together.
Carry the Spirit
with us. Our world needs us and the Spirit we carry forth.
Let us become the light, the truth, and the meaning that we seek.
Amen.